Webinar with Adam R. Welcome to 3PNR. I'm your host, Adam R., and on this episode with me is Steve Kehoe, former Scotland Yard homicide detective. Steven, how you doing, sir?
Adam, I'm good, mate. How are you?
Good, good. Glad to have you on. I appreciate your time. Let's get started with what put you on your path to become a Scotland Yard detective to begin with.
So, I mean, you don't start out to be a Scotland Yard detective. You start off in uniform. And you have to do a certain amount of time sort of patrolling the streets and that. And I did that for probably about 5 years. Funnily enough, when I first joined the police, I had no intention of being a detective. I wanted to be a dog handler, like police dogs.
Right.
But I soon realized actually the thing I enjoyed was arresting criminals. And I soon realized that the way you arrest more serious criminals is to become a detective. So I kind of headed down that path after about 5 or 6 years. And then I didn't become a Scotland Yard detective until 2002. So I joined in 91. So it was 11 years before I became a Scotland Yard detective. And then I started investigating terrorism. I did that for a few years. And then later on did murder. And that's how I finished my career, the last 12 years investigating murder.
I've spoken to a lot of detectives. It weighs on you when you do a lot of murder investigation because it starts making you question your own mortality at some point. Is that about right?
I've never really looked at it like that, if I'm honest. No, I haven't. Since I've left the police, I've written a book and I've started my own channel on YouTube. So I've spoken an awful lot more now than I ever did in the past. You just, when you're doing the job, you just kind of get on with it. You don't really think about what you're doing. So I've had time to reflect since I've left. And I've never really thought of it like that, if I'm honest. I've never, not my own mortality. Obviously you deal with an awful lot of death. And that is something that you kind of get used to over the years. For me, the one thing I never got used to, and I'm pleased I didn't, was the death of children. That always bothered me, children dying, children being murdered. Death itself, I kind of got used to. Yeah, no, actually, that's a new one on me. I've got to be honest. I've never thought of it from that perspective.
Yeah, because I imagine, maybe for me, if I'm seeing death and I'm seeing the absolute evil face of humanity, it makes me, you know, question, like, well, you know, what stops me from being a victim, right? I mean, There's small degrees of separation between victims and everyone else. And it just happens to be that guy selected that person, whether it be a personal one or some sort of weird fetish like these serial killers, right? Mm. And it puts you in a state of, for me, it puts me in a state of questioning, you know?
I've never thought of that. Maybe I will now, Adam. Thanks, mate. You've scared the life out of me now. I'm going to start thinking about it
more. Yeah, because you got to think, like, there's only few things that separate you from that victim. Right. And sometimes it's just preference, you know.
I'm not coming to you for counseling because now something has never bothered me. Now I'm starting to worry.
Yeah. My apologies. It's just a hindsight look of everything. I always view that.
Yeah. Thanks. So, I mean, obviously, you're dealing with the worst of society. You're seeing the worst of society. But you're not dropped into it straight away. So you don't turn up day one from your police training saying, right, you're dealing with a murder and the gruesomeness that goes with it. You kind of build yourself up. So it might be different in America, but certainly in the UK and when I joined, you start off, when you're out and about and you're in uniform, you get given certain calls that nobody else really wants to deal with. And one of those is, people dying. So in the UK, if someone dies suddenly, the police get called to it just to make sure there's nothing suspicious.
Right, the rule out phase.
Say again, sorry?
It's a ruling out, right? You got to make sure it's not something that's, they died, but you're making sure they didn't die from something foul.
Exactly, 100%, yeah. So unless they've died in a hospital or something like that, but if they've died in their home, died in the street, died suddenly, the police would get called. So the first officer would be uniform officer. And then they would assess it. And if they're not happy, then they'll call a detective down. So that job, when I joined, tended to go to the new people. So very quickly. I was a kid when I joined the police. I was 18 months out of school. So I'd never seen anything like that. But you get used to it very quickly. You're getting sent regularly to these dead bodies. And most of them are just people that have just died naturally. But you just kind of get used to it. And it's a weird thing for me. When I first started seeing dead bodies, one of the things that I wasn't expecting is it doesn't look like you're looking at a person. I don't know if it's because like, there's something missing. We call it the soul, or there's some life from it. Obviously, they're dead, so there's no life in it. But there's something missing that makes it not feel like a person, which kind of makes it easier to deal with. And quickly, I kind of got used to that. And then what they used to do is they used to send us to postmortems, autopsies. So you get used to the bodies being cut open and seeing the insides and everything like that. So it's all a bit gradual. So you're not. So when you come into when you're a detective and you're dealing with murders, it's built up over the years. You kind of get used to it. So it's not a shock to the system. And so, for instance, when I was on the anti-terrorist branch dealing with terrorists, I dealt with one of the bombings. We had some underground bombings in London in 2005, and that were suicide bombers on a packed tube. So you can imagine the scene that we come across. And if you drop me in that day one from training school, I probably would have gone a bit mad, and then it would have affected me. But because you're kind of building yourself up, when you come to deal with that, you're all right. You can handle it. It doesn't affect you.
Well, you're needed for that, right? In my eyes, you're desensitized because you've seen so much of it. And for an incident like that, people like yourself are needed because not everyone's going to be able to handle that the same way. And they're going to need fresh eyes to look at it.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair to us as well, we weren't really expecting it. So when I first started dealing with terrorism, I don't know if your listeners are aware of the history in Ireland, and we had a lot of terrorism in Ireland, which spilt over onto the mainland. And we were trained and we were prepared to deal with that sort of terrorism, which pretended to be bombs left in a certain place. Quite often a phone call would go in, so you get time to clear the area. This was the first time, certainly in this country, where bombs were used in that way, on suicides on packed trains. So that kind of we weren't trained and prepared for that. But as I say, although it wasn't what we were training for, we were fine because of the build up to it. We weren't affected, and we were able to kind of adapt our training to the new environment that we were in.
Yeah, terrorism's funny business, man. You're talking about people that are going to walk in and blow themselves up in the name of a religion, and you know that's hard to combat. You know, for enemies, in most cases they go into scenarios where they feel like they're going to make it out of it, and these guys are going in with no expectations of leaving. That's a frightening scenario.
It changes the game completely, moves the goalpost. And when we had the IRA, they play by kind of certain rules. I mean, not obviously not proper rules, because they were still killing people.
Right.
But it was quite often they put a bomb down and they'd warn you in advance. So it was the disruption as much as anything that they were looking to achieve. But with these new top waves of terrorists, that doesn't even come into it. They just want to cause as much death and destruction as possible.
It's every time I hear about terrorism, and I'm hearing they're doing it in the name of a religion. Look, religion across the board has a positive message across the board. So for them to find something so dark and evil to do still blows my mind.
Yeah. I mean, you can't get your head around it, can you? You can't.
It's what happens when you die and you cross that line, right? I talked to a lot of paranormal and afterlife people. What happens if you're the guy that crosses over and they're like, hey, man, you're an asshole. Do you think you did something good? You know what I mean? I don't know. Personally, I can't get my head around that one. That's a tough one.
No, but to them, so they're a complete opposite. They as martyrs, they're going to heaven and they're going to have, I can't remember the number of it now, 70 odd virgins or whatever it is they're going to be. Yeah, so in their mind, what's waiting for them is heaven. So, yeah, and how do you combat that?
It's tough. You can't. It's tough. They're convinced. Yeah. That's brainwash. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I watched a case. I don't remember where I saw it. It was a documentary, which I watch a lot of. And it was one of Osama bin Laden's top guys, and he got to, while in captivity, got to read the Quran in its entirety and he broke out. He was in tears. He didn't realize what he was doing was wrong. He had no clue. So he was, you know, what he was told versus what was actually written, two different things for that guy. So, you know, I wonder how many people are out there in that same scenario, right? They don't even know. They're taking the word of a high leader at face value, and that's dangerous. You should always educate yourself about everything.
Yeah, but you said you hit a nail on the head before, brainwashing, and that's what it is.
Right. I mean, I don't know. It creeps me out. In England itself, is homicide high there?
Definitely not compared to yours, no. So for the book I wrote, I did some statistics, looked into it, and the year that I had available was 2020. And off the top of my head, I think it was something around 650 in England and Wales, 650 in a year.
Wow.
I mean, some of your cities can have that on their own, aren't they?
That's Chicago in a day, you know. It's great. Well, you know, I don't know. I'm gonna have to look further into that. I don't know why that is, but homicide across the map, I mean, America's got the cake. Scary to say that.
Yeah,
especially with serial killers. Only recently, doing the podcast, have I learned of how many serial killers there actually are versus what I knew. It's a scary number. It's different now because we have the technology to find them a little faster. Mm. Once upon a time, these guys were active and everywhere.
It's different here. So I investigated homicide for 12 years from 2009 to 2021. And in London in that time, we had two serial killers identified, and they killed seven people between them. So, and we are the major city in the country. So it's not the same over here at all.
I wonder why that is. Is it just Americans, or, I mean, are they bored? Is that what it is?
You've got mostly American audience. Got to be careful, haven't I?
Look, they can take it as they take it, right? I say it like this, America. And well, now, I mean, again, the police in America, we know, we fell under fire. There's nonsense going on here. This defund craze talk. I don't know about you, but anywhere in the planet where law enforcement's not available, opportunists, they're going to step in and they're going to take over. And they don't have the people's interest in mind. You know, it's a selfish interest. So,
yeah, I mean, any sane person knows that, don't they?
So when you hear people saying defund the police, I'm like, what, are you inviting criminals to your neighborhood? Because that's what you're doing. When you say defund police, your exact words, the message you're conveying is, hey, you can rob our community. We have no protection, no buffer.
Yeah, no, yeah, 100%. I mean, you want more police than anything, don't you? I mean,
indeed.
It's different in the UK and in the States. Obviously, you've had some issues recently, the George Floyd, that really blew things up, didn't it?
It did.
It's difficult for me to really comment because I don't know the ins and outs of what's going on in the States, but I do think it's different than over here. I think generally the people, mostly people, support the police. We had an incident recently where a police officer, a serving police officer in London, kidnapped a woman off the street, murdered her, raped her, murdered her. And that has had a real impact on how people look at the police in terms of, can we trust them? I mean, there's no talk about defunding, but it's hit the trust, which for me, at the end of my career, some of the things I was seeing people say, I found a bit sad because I spent my whole career proud of the fact of the job I did, knowing that when I turn up to a situation and I said to somebody, look, I'm a police officer, 99 times out of 100, that person's going to be relieved and pleased you're there. And then when you see some of the comments of people saying, well, I wouldn't trust the police anymore, I wouldn't call them, etc. I mean, push come to shove, they probably would, because that's what people do. It left a little bit of a bitter taste towards the end of my career to look and see some of the things that people were saying about the job I loved.
Well, it's unfortunate because it's not mostly the people. Here's the downside to it, right? The George Floyd case, for instance. That's one bad cop. One.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you don't know what put him to that point. Who knows what got him to that point? He's disgruntled, or, you know, but some of the things I discussed with some of the other detectives and even some psychologists, like people like him, they could be identified. I mean, I'm sure now we're very aware, right? There's going to be more precautions and psychological evaluations per month Because let's face it, cops deal with crazy nonsense. They deal with the sort of things that none of us want to deal with, period.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So my hat's off to all law enforcement. I wouldn't want to deal with some of the shit they're dealing with. It's insanity. No. You know, you're talking about on an average. Let's say it's something as innocent as a domestic dispute. Even that is a nightmare to get in the middle of because you have two people who allegedly care of one another, whether they're physical or screaming. Here you are playing referee to someone else's problems. You know, I commend the cops for doing that. I couldn't do it. I have friends that are like, that argue with their significant other. And I'm like, go to counseling. I don't know what to tell you, you know, because, and then scale it up. Then you get the serial killers. Then you get people like yourself and like, you know, Cloyd Steiger and some of these other guys that speaking to. They're out there dealing with this. I wouldn't want to deal with it. You know, I'm not saying I don't have the stomach. I'm just saying like I already have a depression looking at humanity lately, the way we treat one another. And, you know, so what people's negative spin on police, whether it be, you know, where you are versus here, social media plays that role. And I got to believe that some of those negative messages that are out there are done intentionally to cause hysteria, panic, and distrust. And it's not being done by the average American or people from the UK. We have enemies. And people don't make room for the idea that these enemies have computers and they make more room for the idea that they have groups of people that are putting this negative vibe out there to cause separation in a westernized, you know, in a civilized nations.
Mm.
You got to look at it that way. So whenever I read something on Facebook, I have to wonder who started this trend because it's as simple as this. Someone makes a crazy idea. They post it about the police. There's just that one person that reads it. Shares it, and then the other like-minded people in that algorithm start joining that, and then before you know it, people that were either on the side of the police or even dead center, they don't know what to believe. You don't know what to believe anymore. You know, it's not like we just have one source of information. It comes from everywhere.
Well, the one I see regularly on Facebook is certainly in the UK, you get the people, whenever an arrest is made in public, everyone gets their cameras out and they're filming it. And arrests can turn violent, and that's not down to the police. That's down to the person that's being arrested. And what you find is that people film it, and they'll choose a segment of the video that looks like the police are being heavy-handed, stick that up on Facebook or Twitter or wherever you want to, Instagram, wherever it goes, and all people are commenting on is watching what the police officer's doing for those 5-6 seconds. Oh, look, police brutality there. When actual fact, what you haven't seen is the build up and the suspect spitting in their face, punching them, doing whatever to try and get away. You don't get to see all that. So then you get all the comments coming on, oh, police brutality, blah, blah, blah. I see an awful lot of that, definitely.
Well, you know, it's sad because I'm going to say this. Cops have to be on guard and they have to be somewhat aggressive. I want to remind you that when they finally caught Ted Bundy, a brutal serial killer, it was on a traffic stop, and that cop had no idea who that was. You know, you see a lot of these videos where cops walk up to the car to get shot. Of course, police are on guard. People are crazy, you know, period. You can't assess one person from the other based upon the way they look. Because I got to tell you, some of these serial killers are regular people. They look like the guy next door, harmless even, mostly. Some of these other more dangerous gangster types, you can't tell anymore. So it's unfair for people to say, well, the cops are brutal. What are they supposed to do? And let me put this in this perspective. You have some dangerous, aggressive people living in your community. Are you going to deal with it? You know how many communities sit in silence and fear of some evil person or evil group living there? The police have to be involved. No choice.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And for the people videoing, look, if you're having an interaction with the police, you're getting pulled over, you want a video because you feel like it might be a negative interaction. Sure, by all means. But do not break your camera out. Harass cops. Follow them around. Don't go. We have this thing in America where these people run up to the police stations and they're recording because it's their First Amendment right. It's not your job. You're not a documentary. You know, you're not making a documentary. You're not an attorney. You don't even work for the city or state. Again, you want to record the police. If you feel like you're having a negative interaction, that's when you do it. You don't harass them. You're provoking.
But they're not doing for that, are they? The reason why most of these people are filming has got nothing to do with rights or anything like that. What they want is the next video clip that's going to blow up so they get more likes, they can get a million likes and followers. That's That's why most of these people are doing it. They're not doing it to look out for anyone. But it's the same fact we're in society now, where your worth is always almost measured on how many likes you get in things.
So that's exactly, you know, that's a case in point. People want to have their videos liked and viewed, and they want a position. They want to feel powerful. Look, I've had interactions with the cops in the past as in my youth that were, you know, considerably negative, but I was raised with respect. And I didn't disagree with the cop or argue back. I mean, and if there was a point where it got to where I felt uncomfortable, get a lawyer, but don't put up a fight. That's the worst thing you're going to do. And 9 out of 10 times, I promise you this, 9 out of 10 times, the cops have good intentions. And just like with me, when I'm, you know, researching the paranormal, or if I'm talking about UFOs, or if I'm researching anything, you know, supernatural, I don't doubt anything. I just have to filter right. And same for cops. They have to be able to filter. They don't know you. They have no idea if you're Ted Bundy or not, you know? So people have to make room for that.
One thing I've noticed, so as I was coming up for retirement, I joined LinkedIn, and just organically, I've ended up with a lot of US law enforcement. And so it's opened my eyes to, because of the posts they make, is that how many officers in the States are getting murdered? And over here, it's every couple of years you might have a police officer murdered. Over there, it seems like almost a weekly thing that you're having someone being shot at or whatever. It's actually quite scary.
It is. It's frightening. And that's why I tell people, you know, they're putting their lives on the line every day and anywhere. It could be any community. Look, crazy people aren't reserved for the city. They're everywhere, you know? So, yeah, when you hear that, and it's very disheartening, especially, you know, I'm on LinkedIn too. I see a lot of those. Breaks my heart to see how often it is. And so again, to remind people, and I don't want to play a broken record, but these guys are going out, they're walking into the fire, man. You know what I mean? They're doing things for us as a society that people in society don't want to deal with. People in communities don't want to deal with evil people. The cops do it, and they do it willingly. No one said, hey, you're a cop. You have to be. You don't get pulled in. You elect to do that. And you're electing to walk into fire every day, whether it be something simple or something even more outrageous, like a terrorist bombing. You know, consider 9/11, you know, 9/11 was a horrific scene.
Yeah.
And every time I see the documentaries, and all I can think is, how did those cops and firefighters do that? How did the imagine the strength it took to walk into a building on fire and protect people?
But do you know what, though? I mean, I obviously wasn't there, but I know police. I know how they think. And I can almost guarantee that 99% of them didn't even think about it. There wasn't a debate, should or shouldn't go in. You just do it. Yeah, it's automatic. You're on autopilot. There are people in trouble. It's a bit of a cliche, but it's often said that it's the police that run towards the trouble as everyone else is running away. And you do that without even thinking about it. There's someone who's violent and they're waving a knife around.
That's why
people are going that way. You're going towards it, and you don't think about it. You don't sit there thinking, "What should I? Shouldn't I do this?" It's your job. You just do it. You just get on and do it.
Yeah, you're walking into that situation with the thought of other people in mind, not yourself.
Yeah, 100%.
That's the X factor. Because, like you said, the majority of people in these scenarios, they're going the other direction. A select few who wear a badge are going into it. And they're going into it without, like you said, they're not thinking about it. It's not just their job. It's of them. It's in their DNA to go out there and do that job.
Yeah. It's not my job anymore, but if I'm in that situation, I'll probably do exactly the same.
Yeah.
Because for my whole adult life, that's how I've been sort of, that's how I act. That's it's in my nature.
Yeah, and you know, your colleagues, your other cop buddies, that's like a family. It's tight knit. You know, I hear that from a lot of them. Like, shout out Brett Preston. He's a sergeant of town of Sneed's Police Department, and he's got a group of six guys he runs around with. And I promise you, that bond is forever.
Yeah.
You know, these are the guys. Again, it's a small community they're in, but the community depends on them. And if you didn't have, small community or not. Let's say Brett Preston and his police aren't there in that small community that's otherwise quiet. You don't think opportunists be like, well, I know a place we could set up shop. No harassment.
Yeah.
That's the first place they're going to. They can set up whatever they want there with no regard of the people that live there. And they know that there's no fear. The police need to be there. People, I can't say that's enough. Like, they have to be there. So in your career, have there been some cases you came across that just tough ones to deal with? I'll say, we'll call them tough ones to deal with.
To me, it was always, I'll always come back to it. It's children. And so I've seen countless murder victims, like their bodies. And if I was to close my eyes now, I don't think I could picture any of them. And that's just because there are so many, other than the kids. And if I close my eyes now, I can picture the kids. And I'll always have that. I'll always carry that with me. So the answer is, yeah, the ones that stick with me, the worst ones, were always where it's children that have been killed. How could you?
you're cutting them short. They don't even know where their life is yet or who they're going to be. Yeah. And how do you know? Yeah. How do you know that the next leader of a nation was not killed? You know, I mean, you don't know.
Yeah, I mean, just seeing them there, laying there. Some of them are just babies. And they've had their life taken away from them by basically evil people. And they will always sit with me. Those cases will always sit with me. That and terrorists, I think. Terrorists are... there were some, actually, whilst I'm talking to you. So we were doing a surveillance job on one group. They had fertilizer in a lockup that they were planning to do a bomb with, and we spent weeks and weeks following them, arrested them, charged them, etc. And then the next job come along, another group. So we're all set up to do the same thing. We thought we're going to be following them for a while, and then someone high up said, no, we're going to arrest them for whatever reason. They must have had some sort of intelligence. Generally, that happens if they're worried that something's going to happen soon. So we swooped on them, arrested them all, took them in for questioning. And I was interviewing two of them. And so at the beginning, we didn't have an awful lot of evidence, to be honest. So you're kind of just filling out the interviews at the beginning. And then we had some, it was a computer hard drive that was found in someone's garage. And they sent us through a document. And it was probably the scariest thing I've ever read in my life. It had a title. It was called The Gas Limos Project. And it was a 50, 60-page document put together by these terrorists on attacks they had planned. And the hostile reconnaissance they'd done, oh, my word. I mean, these were professionals. And they turned out they were Al-Qaeda. And they'd been over to America. And they did reconnaissance on, if I remember the buildings, it was the New York Stock Exchange, the IMF building in Washington, World Bank, I think, something like that in Washington, and the Prudential building, I think it might have been in New Jersey. So they had four of these buildings that they'd done reconnaissance on, and they'd done everything. They knew people that were walking past, where the security was, where the how many cars went past in the day, where security cameras were. They'd done everything. And we were looking at this, I was like, whoa. And so obviously that fed back to America. And I remember it was around 2004. And the next thing we knew, that these buildings all had the army around them. And their plans were, they were chilling. So what the reason Gas Limos Project was, so what their plan was, is they were going to get limousines, fill them up with gas canisters, the sort of ones that you would have on a barbecue, drive them under a building and blow them up to collapse the buildings. Then they were planning a dirty bomb, and they'd worked out from their calculations how many people they could kill with this dirty bomb, how many people would have cancer, how many defects in births there would be as a result of their attack. They were going to steal an oil tanker and drive it into a building. in London, they were going to derail. We've got a train that goes from Heathrow Airport into central London. They were going to time it, so they derailed one as it was coming towards another. There's a particular underground station in London that they were going to plant a bomb because it's under the water, that it would flood the whole system, the underground system. I mean, the amount of death that these people were planning was absolutely on a scale that you wouldn't even believe. So this come in, so we're interviewing them, and we're starting to get from nothing, we suddenly had loads and loads. And then they fed us they had some videos on their computers. And one of the ones I was interviewing, they sent it through, it related to him. And he was in New York. He was on Hudson Bay. Would you call it Hudson Bay?
Yeah, Hudson Bay.
Yeah. So this was 2004. And so he had a video camera and he's filming across the bay. And he gets to the Twin Towers, which is still there. He stops and he makes this noise. And then carries on. Wow. And you know when that moment where the hairs on the back of your neck stand up?
Yeah, yeah.
And we were like, these were proper Al-Qaeda, and they were over in New York, and it would have been obviously pre-2001. And it was like, these knew. These people knew what was going to happen. As soon as you saw that, we were like, play it back, play. Because we were like, at first, you're doubting yourself. And you're like, play it back. And no doubt about it. When he stopped on the Twin Towers and making that noise, and it was just like, oh my God. I mean, these people were evil, evil, evil. I mean, what they had planned, honestly, I couldn't get, as you're reading it, and you're reading it as if it's some sort of fictional novel, but you know it's not. They've put all their efforts into making these plans to carry them out. And if we hadn't got a hold of them when we did, God knows what they would have done.
You know, message there for people after what I just heard. You want to defund police? Imagine, I didn't even factor that in. I'm thinking of criminals. Defund the police, why is it crazy? What I just heard means they would have got away with it. They would have executed each one of those plans.
Hmm.
I mean, there are so many dangers out there that the police play a role. Law enforcement all overall, globe over, right? America, but globe over. You know, that's an effort between the UK and America to stop these individuals.
Yeah.
Because they're brainwashed. In their mind, they're doing God's work. And I got to tell you, that's, you can't stop that. So you need the buffer. And that scares me to my core, because that's then. They're still plotting now. There's no doubt they are. It's just now we have computers and we have, here's what I believe. And I'm going to say this to people. When you hear these negative messages, especially about law enforcement or other things, politics, whatever it may be, just picture your enemy sitting by a computer laughing, because they're going to put this stuff on social media. They're going to try to put it in your head, and they're going to cause division. And I'm seeing a lot of that. You know, when I was a kid, there was politics and division, and, you know, there was obviously no social media. But what a platform to start problems. You can start all sorts of fires on social media. So, I don't know.
Nobody gets on anymore, do they? Yeah. If it's not politics, it's religion. If it's not religion, it's people, are they getting vaccinated or not? You go into LinkedIn. LinkedIn's supposed to be a professional platform for you to network. And as I'm reading some of the posts, people are getting angry at other people on these posts because they might have a different view. And it's like nowadays people can't have a different view to each other without going to extremes. Maybe because it's social media and you didn't get to see it before. But, and maybe I'm looking through rose-tinted glasses, but I'm sure years ago we all got on a bit better than we do now. And it just seems a sad world sometimes.
Well, much better, because now social media provides a platform for, let's put some categories: cowards, angry people, crazy people, you know, and that's just some of the categories of these people that have an outlet now. And something crazy that could be posted might translate to some other guy who's just angry, and the guy who's just angry will translate to the other guy who has some sort of belief system that he could use this to his advantage. And then you have this molehill that's now Mount Everest, and it's hard to, at the end of the day, I say to people, listen, this is my belief. If you want a religion, humanity. If you want a race, human. And if you want a place of origin to celebrate, how about Earth? because it should be that simple. I don't know why it's, I'm shocked in this current day and age that race is even a factor anymore. That blows me away that religion and especially race. Like, I remember being a kid and I didn't really give race a thought, you know, because I grew up in I'm Italian, Puerto Rican mix. A lot of my friends are black and Spanish and white. I didn't understand race. I tell you when I started understanding it more post high school, because I paid attention to the news and, you know, you see all this stuff and you're like, what is this nonsense? And now here it is years later. How the hell have we not evolved yet? It blows me away. And I'll tell you why. Social media provides a platform for people to cause division and problems. Social media could be a beautiful thing. It really could. It could spread more positive messages if it elected to. The algorithms, I'm not saying to censor, but you'd think the algorithms would pick up more of the positives. We've had a really rough go the last couple of years. Humanity, that is. So, I don't know. It's tough.
Yeah, but then if you look at the news, if there's a good news story, how many people share that compared to the other side?
Yeah,
that's been like that for years. The people sell newspapers on the back of the front pages being as outrageous or as scary or as, do you know what I mean? That's how they're going to sell their newspapers. They're not going to put a fluffy, happy story on the front because people ain't going to pick it up.
Yeah, you're right. You know, that should scare people more. You know, I mean, if people are enjoying the negatives like that so much more, again, you want to get rid of police? You want average people to be in charge of communities? I mean, that's the Wild West, and that didn't turn out well, you know? So
I've got to be honest, Adam. I don't look at the news an awful lot.
Nor do I.
I don't read newspapers. My social media is very much about me and my friends and my network, you know what I mean? Because otherwise you just end up it makes you angry. And it's like, I've got no time for that. I've got a family. I've got my life to worry about. I'm not going to get myself wound up by what's on social media. And some people, by the looks of them, just spend their whole day just getting wound up by what they're reading. You know, just go outside and go for a walk. go and enjoy some country air or something.
I spend more of my time watching documentaries. A lot of it. I like documentaries. I like learning, you know. I'm starting to learn more about the cosmic web. I think the biggest rant on social media for me ever, I was complaining about a fly that was in my house that wouldn't die. It was this tiny little fly that, for whatever reason, it just had a prolonged lifespan, and all it did was harass me, and I could never get it. So that was my biggest social media rant. Let's speak about your book, Stephen.
Yeah, so if you'd said to me a couple of years ago I was going to write a book, I would have called you mad. But then a lot of things I've done since I've left the police, I would have said you're mad. As I was leaving, I was like, what am I going to do with my life? What I didn't want to do, and my whole purpose when I leave now, is I don't want to work for anyone else. I want to be my own boss. Spent 30 years being told what to do. I want to be my own boss for a while. So I was setting up a company. I've set it up. And I was writing a book that reflected what my business was going to do, which was basically going into companies and training their staff around decision making, but making it interesting for them. So linking it into murders. And so, well, this is how we investigate murders. And this is how some of the skills for murder investigations can benefit you as an organization. And everything I've read was, if you want to position yourself as an expert, write a book. So I did. I started thinking, well, I'm going to write this book from business. It's going to explain what I want to do, etc. So the first part of the book was, this is how we investigate murders. And the second part was supposed to be, this is how it benefits your business. But as I was writing it, I realized it was trying to be two different things, and I needed to split it. So I needed to first off write, this is how we investigate murders. And it was like, well, who am I going to write this to? A lot of thought, and I thought, well, it's going to have to be true crime fans, people that are interested in the processes and murders themselves. So, yeah, so that's how I started writing it. I went on a couple of Facebook groups, one in the States, one in the UK, true crime fans, and said, like, I'm writing this book, introduce myself. What would you like to know about murder? And I got loads of responses, got about 650 responses. And they gave me loads of questions they wanted answered. So I basically wrote the book around that. If this is what people want to know about murder, I linked it into my career. So it's not just a manual. It's about murders I've investigated as well, linking them into different parts of the process. So if I'm talking about, crime scenes, and I link a crime murder into that crime, that type of crime scene, or CCTV, whatever it is. It's basically how Scotland Yard investigate murders. So it's going to be different around the world. In the States, they're going to do it to differently how we do it. But it's from crime scene to court, crime scene to trial. This is the process. This is what we do. This is how we investigate murders. This is how we catch killers. And as I say, linking it into murders I've investigated to give it a bit of life.
Huh. So you also have a YouTube channel.
I do.
And you're on that channel. So I haven't checked it out yet. This is my thing. I was waiting to talk,
Adam,
and then I'm going to get on there.
You haven't looked at my YouTube channel yet.
I don't look at anyone's stuff till I talk to them, because I want the excitement. You know what I mean? So here's this thing I do. When I interview people, I do everything I can to not learn about them. I want our conversation. So when that, I get excited about something, it's organic. I'm actually excited.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I like that. So I'm going to start watching now. So let's talk about the channel and what you're doing on there.
So it's almost an extension of the book, really. So it's aimed at true crime fans, but who want to learn about murder. So there's lots and lots of true crime channels. Vast majority of them are made by people that have got no idea how murders are investigated. And I'm not having a pop at them. It's they've found a niche that they're doing it, and people are enjoying it. So that's great. But what I want to do is position myself a little bit differently. It's like, if you want to understand the processes, if you want to know how murders are really investigated, this Friday I'm doing a stream on the Delphi murders. But I'm doing it from a position of an investigator. I'm a Scotland Yard detective, been investigating murder for 12 years, been a police officer for 30 years. I'll give you my perspective on what I see from that case. So rather than just someone coming on without any clue of the processes, that's where I'm positioning myself, from someone who can come from a position of knowledge and give a different perspective. And so the channel is not completely and utterly serious. I know murder is a serious subject, but I want to bring a bit of personality to it as well. So I have Q&As with my subscribers, and we have a bit of a laugh. They ask me questions about murder. We go through it, but it's not all coming on with a big black cloud over the top of me. I do it with a smile on my face, and it's like, you can learn whilst you're enjoying yourself. And it's going really well at the moment. I'm getting lots of positive feedback. I've been doing it for about a month, and I'm about 850 subscribers. So it's going all right. I'm really enjoying it, and I'm excited to see where it's going to go. And so I've got lots of plans in the future for things I can do for the people that subscribe. So if any of your listeners are true crime fans and they want to tune in, I think they'll get something out of it, even if they can laugh at me making a fool of myself because I can't murder equipment, whatever it is. it's all right.
I like that idea. I like the concept. I'll tell you a couple of things. One, you can inspire someone to become a detective. It's got to start somewhere, right?
It's funny you should say that. So as almost like a day job. So I've got this in the evening, and my day job. So I started doing a bit of public speaking. And I went into, my first one was in a university. They were forensic science students. And I went in and for an hour and a half, I was just asked to go in and explain how murders were investigated. And they said they'd never had any. This is from the students themselves. They'd never had so many people stay back after the talk. And I said, "Look, here's my email." And I had so many of them contacting me saying, "Oh, I want to be a homicide detective." And it's like, it was quite nice actually. Because it's like, well, to inspire someone it's a nice thing, isn't it, to feel that your words can make someone want to choose to go and do something like that. I was quite chuffed at that.
Of course. I mean, there should be more programs where they have youth ride along with police, whether it be a detective for homicide or robbery, or just if you want to be a B cop, there should be more programs where there's ride-alongs for youth. I promise you, if anything is going to get spin a positive message, is law enforcement's involvement with youth.
Yeah.
I think that we need more programs like that. One.
Yeah, we've got quite a lot of them over here in the UK. So it's, they tend to do it so, like, there'll be a boxing club, like the Met Police in London have set up a boxing club where the kids can come along and they're being trained by police officers, but not, if you know what I mean. So they're just in their gym gear. So they're getting to know them as people. And then once you get, you break down those barriers, and it's easier to introduce stuff. And we're doing the same with football. You call it soccer. So people can come along, same sort of thing in different environments. So you're taking away that barrier of them and us. And then once you've got that relationship, then it's much easier to introduce the ideas around the work the police do. Now I'm not saying it's perfect by any shot in London. Definitely not. There's a lot that's work still needs to be done, but that sort of thing is a start.
Well, it's needed. You got to have, if everything was perfect, there would be no jobs. There'd be no, nothing would happen. You know, I get diversity too, because you need some people have to have disagreement. It's just the extremes you go to, you got to be careful with, but yeah, for what you're talking about, it's inspiring. And then your channel, I'm looking forward to it. Because then you're basically looking at cases and putting your perspective on it. And I think that's really interesting. I mean,
yeah, that's one side of it. So, yeah, so looking at cases, bringing on guests from the world of murder. So the moment, I've got a couple of their authors who have written books based on their experiences around it. But bringing in experts from scientists or sort of similar to what you do, but talking to police officers. I've got so many different ideas. And then one of the things that I'm going to build up to as well. So I've got these, they're just short videos and no more than about 10 minutes each. And they talk about different aspects of murder investigation. So I've come up with my own reasons as to why people kill. So there's a video on that. How do detectives deal with murder investigations, with what they see? How a cold case is solved. How do you solve a case with no evidence? So there's little videos people can go on. I say no more than 10 minutes. And they're just an answer to a simple question. So there's all sorts of different aspects that I want to do. So it's not, I'm not just going to be one thing. And one thing I'm not going to be doing, which I'm really quite strong about, is I'm not going to be that guy that's coming on and saying he can solve a murder over the internet, because I know how difficult it is to solve murders.
Yeah,
it's doubly difficult to solve cold cases. So I've seen a lot from true crime channels, and again, I'm not criticizing them because there's a place for it because people like it, where they come on and they're trying to solve the case on the internet, and you can't do that.
Yeah, you got to be able to handle everything. Look, you could draw clues and ideas. You definitely can do that. But as far as getting your hands on evidence and going to the scene and, you know, judging the distance between where the victim was versus where the direction they went in, did they run, did they walk, the timing, yeah, that's a whole different ballpark.
Yeah, yeah. So like the Delphi murders, I'll be honest with you, from the outside looking in, I've got some serious questions about the investigation. And I'm happy to say that, but I'll say it from a perspective of this is what I've witnessed and this is where I think it's fallen down. What I'm not going to do is try and solve it for them, because I'm not going to do that. It's just impossible. I can't do that.
Right.
So my perspective will be from the outside looking in, but with a professional eye.
You got to do what I do. When I'm on this podcast and I'm talking about, you know, space or UFOs or ghosts, I always say, this is my theory and this is what I think, because I don't speak from science. I speak from pure theory and imagination. That's about it. It's the extent of it. The most science I've ever done involved something in the kitchen and accidents, you know? So.
And a Bunsen burner in school for me, yeah.
Yeah. So for you, I got to connect you with Cloyd Steiger and Michael Sinski.
I think I'm on LinkedIn with both of them, actually.
Yeah, yeah. You should really connect with those guys, man. I've had them on the show. And Michael discussed, you know, they, between the two of them, they've investigated a lot of, you know, they're both former homicide detectives in cold case, serial killers. And there's one story they tell me where there's a serial killer. They have him in custody. And they're talking about, you know, I guess the best way to put it is he's a regular guy when they're talking to him. And then they bring up the subject of one of one of the victims that got away, and he like transformed. He went from like talking like, hey man, to yeah, I know who that is. Like his body language, his tone, The look in his face altered. The predator came out because he was mad about that victim that got away. And again, people, I'm sorry to say it, but that guy represents a lot out there. And you want to get rid of police? What are you, crazy? What are you, nuts? There's people that basically shift who they are, you know? So, but yeah, you should really connect to those guys. I really advise that. It would be good for the show.
Yeah, we'll do. Yeah.
Anyway, Steve, it has been great talking to you. I enjoyed our conversation.
Yeah, brilliant. I enjoyed talking to you, Adam. Yeah.
And make sure you get me the link to the YouTube channel. I'll put it into the description.
Yeah. So yes, it's Murder Academy. So everything I do is Murder Academy. I've got a website. But yeah, I'll send you the link.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for coming on again.
Cheers, Adam. Take care, mate.
You take care.
Yeah. Bye.